Hello and welcome to The Headquarters, the official podcast of RaptorsHQ.com, SB Nation's Toronto Raptors community. I'm your host, Sean Woodley, and I'm joined for, I guess it's our season premiere episode by Raptors HQ's John Godis. How you doing, man?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm good. I mean, we've done episodes recently, but I guess this like sort of kicks off the preseason and the actual 2016-17 season, so we'll call this the premiere. We actually hit our 1 year anniversary like 12 days ago, which is pretty cool. So thanks to everyone who's listened and downloaded over the last year. We really appreciate it. How are you, man?
I'm pretty good. It was a long summer. You know, we tried to do a couple shows there. I couldn't make it, but it just felt like being out of the loop for so long. I've missed basketball, and you know, yesterday felt like the first real day of the season with media day going on, and now I feel good. Like I feel like I'm getting back into form and doing the show today. It seems like you know, the weather's changing and we're getting back into it now.
Yeah, getting out of the stupid hot weather. Here's some hot weather talk for you. Fall is so far and away the best season. Like, summer needs to just go away.
Oh, forever. Dude, yeah.
Yeah, you're Winnipeg, so I'm not sure how the summers are there, like whether they're extreme or not. But like here, it's been terrible all summer. I hate the heat. Everyone thinks I'm crazy for thinking summer is like the worst of all the seasons. But like, I would much prefer minus 20 to plus 30 any day. I can't do it, man.
Yeah, we have good summers here. Like, it's pretty dry. I know it's like you've got that East Coast kind of wet, damp,
tropical, humid disgustingness.
Yeah, and it just gets worse when you're in like an urban environment like that. We have pretty dry summers, so I like summer. It's like it's my favorite season, but fall's definitely up there. Like, you gotta love
fall's the best. Everything's coming back. You know, the sports are back. It's a good time.
Yeah.
I'm so sick of summer. Anyway, that's my hot weather talk for today. We have some stuff to get to today. It's, as we mentioned, Media Day was yesterday on Monday. Or I guess you're going to hear this on Wednesday, most likely. But it was Monday. The general Media Day stuff, we'll get into sort of the nuts and bolts of it. Not much news came out of it. There's Damari Carroll's knee thing that we'll get to. And we'll just sort of talk some general preseason stuff. And then the big thing we're doing today... I believe next week we're going to do our prop bets that we did last year. I think that was a fun episode that we did. I don't think you were involved in it,
no.
But I think next week I'm going to try to get you, Russell, and Harshaw on, and we'll all pick our props for this coming season. But this week we're going to, pick our win totals for the Eastern Conference teams. I came to John today with this idea to do this, and I don't think he expected me to, you know, be so in depth. I tried to get it like to the perfect amount of wins for the entire league so it would make sense and everything would add up to be 1230 wins, which is what the number of games that is or number of wins that is handed out, I guess, over the course of a season. And then John took it to a new level by putting a spreadsheet together, so we'll get to that. It'll be fun. Lots of Bulls slander, I'm sure, to come, so just stick around. We have all that and a lot more to talk about today on the Headquarters. Okay, welcome back to the Headquarters. Sean Woodley here with John Godis. So gonna get into some Media Day stuff. I don't like Media Day very much. I mean, it's always exciting that things are back and rolling and, you know, the season is sort of on the horizon. But it's weird for the Raptors, too, because Media Day happens. You know, the typical boring Media Day, you know, conversation takes place. And then, you know, nothing ever really comes out of it. There was some news that we mentioned off the top with Damari Carroll. But other than that, it's just like kind of the same answers from everybody. Oh, yeah, I just wanted to get better, you know, try to get in good shape. We're looking forward to the season, yada, yada, yada. But with the Raptors, it's even more so because they're just off to Vancouver now. And it's, you know, they're not even like in the city to really pay attention to. And they're kind of out of mind for a little bit until their first preseason game on Saturday. But for you, John... like, is there anything that you particularly liked about Media Day or anything you like about Media Day in general when it rolls around?
Yeah, I mean, you're right. It's not the most juicy stuff from a basketball standpoint. And I think that the only real surprise was the Damari Carroll news. And I'm sure we'll get into that into detail. But, you know, we knew that Jared Sullinger would probably be the starter. And, you know, other than that, it's just kind of seeing guys again. How do they look? And muscle watch, that type of thing. Who gained weight, who, you know, how much weight did they gain? Anthony Davis grew an inch, apparently. according to their media day. So it's all that kind of like, it's all that kind of stuff. One thing I thought like was interesting from this media day, not from the Raptors standpoint, but kind of from around the league, is that reporters were, you know, bringing up the subject of social injustice and all that stuff. And it kind of added another layer to media day. We got a lot of thoughtful answers from guys around the league, including Kyle Lowry, I think. And so that was interesting for me to read and kind of keep up on what was going on. I think it was Greg Popovich who probably took the cake as far as thoughtful responses go. Mm-hmm. But I mean, you know, if you're looking for technical basketball stuff, media day is not going to be your day. They're taking a lot of pictures. They're getting those like intro videos ready for the stuff that they put on the Jumbotron. Like, it's not, you're not going to glean anything from this, but it is that first day. And you know that with training camp on the way, we'll start to get, you know, actual news starting with media day. So it's kind of a good kicking off point.
For sure. On the social injustice thing, yeah, I think Norm Powell, I was down there for TSN radio and I was just sort of wrangling guys to do phone interviews with the station while I was there. And Norm Powell, I didn't hear the interview because he was on my phone doing it, so I didn't really get to catch it. But apparently he had some pretty interesting things to say about what the Raptors might do. So I think you can check that interview out on TSN.ca or TSN1050.ca. What's that?
Plug.
Yeah, yeah. So yeah, that's kind of that's definitely that added a layer of interestingness to the whole thing. But yeah, I think the main news that came out, first of all, you mentioned Muscle Watch. The only thing I noticed for me was Bebe looks a lot less scrawny than normal. He looks a little you know, thicker in the arms, maybe a little thicker in the gut area as well. So I don't know if that's good or bad, but he looks less like a stick, so that's good, I suppose. And I guess Bruno looked a little bigger too. But I guess the more important thing is Damari Carroll. Sort of came out yesterday that he's not 100% yet, and the Raptors are going to kind of ease him in. And he, you know, there might be some restrictions on his minutes early in the season. I'm just wondering what you think is sort of the ramification of that, because Damari Carroll is important. The Raptors managed to get by last year with him playing, what, 26 games, 27 games?
Yeah.
But, like, he's very important to a team that, you know, has wing depth, but if he were to go down, you know, that's thrown a lot more into question because you're trusting guys like Norm Powell and Terrence Ross, who, you know, I think Norm Powell is going to have a nice season, and I, you know, everyone knows what I think about Terrence Ross, but, you know, Damari Carroll is supposed to be the starter on this team, and the team works better when he's in there. And everything is just a lot more smooth and makes a lot more sense on the floor. Are you concerned with this news? Are you happy the Raptors are going to take precautions? Like, what was your read on it?
Yeah, so I guess the full story is he took, what, a month off of basketball entirely and just kind of rested after the season was over, and then he's slowly working his way back into workout shape. They're putting him on a minutes restriction in the preseason and then hoping that they can go without any hold when the regular season starts. But I mean, we've heard that story before, right? That was the story towards the end of the season. They were going to play him for 5 to 10 games, and then he was going to have a no minutes restriction when the playoffs started. And that didn't really happen. He didn't play with a minutes restriction, but he clearly wasn't healthy through the whole postseason, and the stats kind of play that out. Yeah, as far as him being an impact, being injured, I think that, you know, apart from Kyle Lowry and DeMar DeRozan, he's really the guy who affects the team's bench depth. When he goes down, you're forced to bring up Terrence Ross, which takes away some scoring off the bench, or Norm Powell is put in a situation where he has to come in and play 30 minutes a game, so this team has just waited and waited for Damari Carroll to, you know, be a fully functioning member of the team. They had it for maybe 15 games at the most at the beginning of last season, but the plantar fasciitis popped up. He played through that knee pain, and then finally he opted for the surgery. So it seems weird to think that, you know, it's been a year and a bit since they've signed him, but we really haven't seen Damari Carroll as a member of the Toronto Raptors really at all yet.
Yeah. It's especially important too, because I mean, you know, he's mostly a three, but it, you know, a lot of the time at the start of last season, he was a four in a lot of closing units. Yeah. And You know, the Raptors are going to rely on him to play some four this year, I think, just because, you know, Biombo's gone. Their backup center position's a little light. And James Johnson's gone, too. Like, James Johnson's no great shakes, but, like, he was a nice piece of depth there that you could plug in and get, you know, semi-reasonable minutes from. So now, you know, the four spot, if you're going to – I mean, Jared Sullinger, I think, we're all kind of considering is a lot better as a – as a backup five, in most of his minutes, if the Raptors can sort of work that out in the rotation. And, you know, Carroll's going to be a valuable piece as a four who can go back and forth between those two positions, right? And if he's out, you lose that element, and, you know, you get the front court depth starts to look really thin if you can't use Carroll for 10 minutes at the four, and you're relying on, you know, you're relying on, you know, a mix of Patterson and Sullinger to take up the 4 minutes, because there's not really any other wings on the Raptors that can do that. It's a little tough. I'm just rueing that the Raptors didn't bring in Lance Thomas. Raptors had, like, a guy who could, like, a 3-4 kind of hybrid guy would have been such a perfect fit. Obviously, like, that's totally not happening anymore, and the amount of guys available out there are kind of slim. And I think we have questions about this too, but it's a bit of a bummer that he's not 100% yet. I still am reasonably confident that the Raptors can get him there. You know, there's still a month until the season starts, so here's hoping that, you know, their program for him in the preseason, you know, slowly ramps him up to where he's ready to go. But, you know, it's concerning. He's in the second year of a 4-year deal. I think he's 30 now.
He's 30, yeah.
Yeah, so it's not...
That's always a scary number.
Yeah, no kidding. It's not the ideal situation for DeMar Carroll, that's for sure.
Yeah, I mean, he's a guy who you can just trust to play his role, too, and he's really the perfect complement for DeRozan and Lowry's slashing game, because he's a reliable three-point shooter when he's healthy, and he's a great defensive player when he's healthy. But they really just, like I said, they haven't seen it that much. They haven't seen him put it together at all as far as health is concerned, and going on a year and a half now, obviously that's pretty darn concerning that, you know, he came back and is still not 100%. So I trust that they understand that, you know, he's not needed in the first 2 months of the season. He's not going to move the needle. We'll talk about win totals, but, you know, having him at the end of the season is what they need him for. And I hope that they don't push him like, he pushed himself last year and ended up with more injuries than he probably would have if they'd have just sat him down. With that, when he had the foot injury. So you hope that they sit him when he needs to be sitting and when he needs to get healthy.
Yeah. Other than Carroll, again, not a ton that came out of media day, really. But I just kind of want to look forward to sort of the preseason and, like, what storylines kind of interest you most. Because, you know, there's not really, you know, a lot of it's set in stone, right? You know, most of the roster is, like, there's like 14 guys who are probably guaranteed to make the team. That 15th roster spot is interesting to an extent, because I think whoever gets it will eventually lose it to DeLon Wright when he comes back from his injury anyway. Mm-hmm. So it's interesting for a month and a half. But I don't know. Is there anything else that, you know, piques your interest about what we're going to see over the next few weeks?
You know, not really. I think the question of Patterson and Sellinger is pretty much put to rest, and we knew that Sellinger was going to be a starter. I'm interested in seeing how they – you know, fit Bebe into the process here, how he, you know, what rotation he comes out and plays in preseason, where he's going to be as far as this team is concerned, who ends up as their with their backup center minutes, because I think they'll try everybody in the preseason and see what sticks. So I want to see if Bebe has advanced his game at all, because I think he's going to be a really critical piece for this team. He's probably out of that group of guys the one that you expect to be ascendant to get that backup center spot. But he's been, you know, his game's been up in the air in the past. And I know at Media Day, he was very focused on projecting a serious image after kind of being a source of jokes, not, you know, game-wise, but, you know, people don't really take him that seriously over the last year and a half because he hasn't had the pressure of being a rotation player. So I'm interested to see if he can prove that. I think just seeing how everything shapes up as far as the rest of the rotation goes is interesting. And I didn't see a lot of the two rookies in Summer League, so I'm curious to see them play too.
Yeah, I mean, Siakam had the really nice start to his first game, and then he got hurt and didn't see him again, which sucks. But Siakam's a guy I'm really interested in because, you know, we talk about sort of the lack of depth in the front court. It's at least reliable depth. There are a lot of guys there, just not ones you're sure you can trust. Siakam's interesting, man. Like, I don't know. It's tough to project anything for a rookie, but you know, would it be crazy to see a similar sort of trajectory that Norm Powell had last year, where, you know, he starts in the D League or, you know, is at the end of the bench and slowly carves himself out a role? You know, I don't think it would be as prominent as what Powell had by the end of the season, where he was starting games. But you know, Siakam's a guy that people seem pretty high on, and he's not like a guy you're asking to go in to be skillful. You're just kind of asking him to go in and, you know, grab rebounds and play some defense and, you know, get some dirty buckets around the basket. I don't know. That's a guy I'm interested in seeing. I definitely want to see him play for more an extended time. And then, yeah, the backup center thing is interesting too, because like I said, I think Sullinger is best suited to be the backup center, just sort of how he works. And I'm interested to see if they're going to, you know, at least look at the Patterson starting lineup, because I can't get this image out of my head of that Lowry, DeRozan, Carroll, Patterson, Valanciunas lineup just eviscerating teams, because everything about that lineup makes so much sense on both ends of the floor. I just think it could be really, really good and really dominant when it's out there. And maybe they just use it as a closing lineup, and maybe they sort of do what they did last year where they started Scola, but he never really saw the floor in fourth quarters. Maybe there's a similar role for Sullinger there. But I'm interested in seeing that starting lineup and, you know, the potential one with Patterson in there, because I think that could be a buzzsaw of a lineup. What do you think about that?
Yeah, last season there were a lot of nights where they kind of just washed the first 8 minutes with Scola out there, and then before, you know, the different bench lineups started to come in. I don't think it'll be that bad this year. I think, you know, Sellinger is a huge upgrade off of Scola. He's younger. I think he's got a lot to prove on a contract year. So I'm excited to see him play. I would prefer, I think, at this point to see him start, because you're not messing with what worked for you last year, which was Patterson playing the closing minutes, like the closing role, and Sellinger or Scola playing the beginning. I think it'll work out in the end, but what I'm curious to see is whether they go in that hole in the first 6-7 minutes of the game, and if it's just not working, because it is a bit of a defensive issue with Valanciunas and Sellinger out there together.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think it's going to be as big an obvious issue as it was with Scola and Valanciunas. I think Sellinger's a better, more mobile defender than Scola was. But the thing is, on offense, you know, Scola, you know, no one respected his three-point shot, but he was able to knock down like 40% of his threes last year, mostly from the corner. And there's this thing I keep coming back to with Sullinger, man. Like, I wrote about him at length at the start of the offseason when they signed him, and I keep coming back to it. Just his shot chart is weird, and he doesn't take corner threes. He took two all last year at, I think 100 attempts or something like that. Two of them came from the corner. And, you know, he's a bad three-point shooter from everywhere else on the floor. I want to see the Raptors hopefully incorporate the corner three in for him more, because, you know, it really works for the Raptors when they have that release valve in the corner, you know, that Lowry and DeRozan can find if they're, you know, sort of, you know, cut off of the basket. And that's why Patterson works so well with that group too. So yeah, Sullinger needs to hit corner threes. There's no guarantee he will. And if he can't, he could become a bit of a, you know, a problem for that starting lineup. But I want to see if he can sort of add that range, because, you know, the Raptors seem to be able to coach guys up on their shooting too. I mean, Norm Powell has turned into, you know, a respectable three-point shooter after that was his big knock coming out of college. Luis Scola decided to shoot threes last year. I'm not sure, you know, what role the Raptors coaching staff played in that, but it must have been something, and just sort of entrusting him with that confidence to do it. So that's one thing I'm really keeping my eye on, is if Sullinger starts distributing his shots a little bit more differently. Because that's going to be important to him gelling with the rest of the guys in that starting lineup.
Yeah, and I think Sellinger, when he was in Boston, had more opportunity to freelance as far as the offense was concerned. I mean, a lot of what they ran just went through Isaiah Thomas, and, you know, the rest of the guys did what they were going to do. I think the Raptors have three players in their starting lineup who have very defined games and are dominant with the ball in Lowry, DeRozan, and Valanciunas. You expect those guys to be certain places on the floor. So I think this is just going to be what happened with Scola. I think he's just going to fit in where he fits in. And they're going to want him, like you say, to shoot corner threes. And that's one thing to definitely watch for in the preseason.
I also really want to watch Valanciunas and see if he can kind of carry over the things he was doing well in the playoffs. I mean, it's tough to gauge in preseason just because, you know, the competition isn't always the fiercest. And, you know, you're not always playing against, you know, starting units and things like that. But, you know, I've talked about this at length all summer. It was one thing that really gave me hope for him this coming season, is he became a way better pick and roll scorer in the playoffs, especially especially against, you know, Indiana. He was really good in that facet, and you know, you'd really hope that he can continue doing that. And also the passing out of the post, that's been a thing for a little while that he can't do. He started to show some flashes last year where, you know, it looked like it was something he was becoming more comfortable with. And it sucks that he got hurt in the playoffs when he was sort of hitting his peak, because, you know, a lot of those things were starting to come together. So yeah, I want to see sort of if he's progressed in those little things that, you know, maybe they're not huge elements of his game, but I think they could really unlock another level with him where he just fits more into what the Raptors want to do on offense. So that's pretty much what I'm looking for. Other than that, I guess we'll just sort of see what the preseason dictates. You know, the Carroll thing is obviously something to keep an eye on, but I'm just excited it's back, man. I'm excited to get to the preseason games, and the Warriors game on Sunday should be fun in Vancouver, or Saturday, so we'll get to that. But we have something else to get to on the other side. We're going to take a quick break, and we're going to come back with your Eastern Conference win total projections. We're going to sort of hash out where the Raptors are going to finish in the East and, you know, how everything's going to shake out. So we'll be back in just a second here on the Headquarters. All right, welcome back to the Headquarters. Sean Woodley here with John Godis. Going to dive into your Eastern Conference win predictions. I spent a lot of time over my lunch break today sort of hashing out where teams were going to finish in terms of total wins. I ended up being lucky. So how it works is we wanted to try to get to 1,230 wins total with our projections. So we had to project for the Western Conference as well, obviously, and work in that as well, just to make sure we had the right number. I think we're just going to go through the East. We could quickly go through our Western if you want. Did you do West or no?
I did a West. Maybe we do the top three or just have a quick, like, overall discussion at the end about what the West and
yeah, that'll
how
work,
that
yeah.
affected our thinking.
Yeah. Well, so I have way less wins for the East than the West, because I think the West is going to be, you know, back to its dominant self this year, and I kind of think the East is bad, which we're going to get into right here. I'll just go over my Western one right now. I'll just go top to bottom, and if you have any quibbles, you can point them out, and then we can move on to the East. Yep. We'll just get the West out of the way. Okay. So I have the Warriors with 70. Second, I have the Clippers with 58. The Spurs I have at 54. The Jazz are fourth at 52. Grizzlies at 49. Thunder 47. Rockets 45. What's that?
You had the Grizzlies way higher than I do.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, I think they're back, man. Chandler Parsons, healthy Marc Gasol.
I had them winning 37 games and out of the playoffs.
Whoa.
Yeah. Finish your list. I've got a couple other things we can talk about.
Okay. All right. So, yeah, I got Grizzlies fifth, 49. Thunder with 47, sixth. The Rockets next at 45 wins. The Blazers I have in the eighth spot with 42. Then ninth, I have the Mavs with 40. Wolves with 10th with 38. Nuggets with 36. Kings with 35. Pelicans 32. Suns 25. And I had the Lakers rounding it out at 21 wins.
Interesting. You definitely had more wins in the West than I did.
Yeah, I have a lot. I think I had something like 650, maybe something like that.
Yeah, I still have a soft middle in my Eastern Conference in that 44 to 48 range. So I think I just had less wins overall in the West. But I got Warriors at 69, Spurs 61, Clippers 56. I was way higher on the Blazers than you were. I've got them 4 and 52.
Wow.
I got Thunder 49. I've got Jazz at 48, Rockets 45, Mavericks 44. I got Timberwolves in the 9 spot at 42, the Grizzlies there with 37. I've also got the Pelicans at 37, mm-hmm. Kings 32, and then Nuggets 30, Suns 27, and I've got the Lakers at 13.
Okay. So I'm a little higher on the Nuggets than you.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I'm higher on the Grizzlies for sure, and I think I'm higher on the Jazz than you as well. But yeah, I think most of our playoff teams overlap, right?
Yeah, pretty much. So why so high on the Grizzlies?
I just think Chandler Parsons fits that team nicely. It's some shooting that they haven't really had. I think Marc Gasol is going to be back and fine and healthy. Mike Conley is also good. I don't know. I think they're just going to kind of get back to what they were before the injuries kind of killed them last year. I really like that team overall. And who's their coach now? Dave Fizdale. Oh yeah. I kind of like Fizdale. Fizzy. There's some buzz about Fizzy. So I like that. Yeah. And yeah, the West is just so much better. I had to like add wins to teams because I just think There's so many bad teams in the East, but we can want to get to the East now.
Yeah, let's do it.
Okay, all right. So this is where it matters. We'll go team by team and go a little slower than we do with the West, and we're gonna go from bottom to top. So I'll go first. Last place I had the Nets with 14 wins. What do you
have? I'm almost there with you. I've got the Nets with 15 wins.
Yeah, the Nets are gonna be really bad, man.
Their media day photo was absolutely hilarious. The five guys, and I swear to God, I think I could name one of them. And I don't remember who it is now. Like
I got two. There's far left was Jorge Gutierrez.
Oh, that yeah.
And far right was Chase Budinger. I couldn't name the other ones.
Yeah, it's going to be funny. Like they're just going to be so bad. And it'll be nice for the 76ers to not finish last this year, so.
Yeah, I tweeted a couple days ago when they signed Budinger. I was like, "Oh, I'm really interested to see what Budinger does as the guy in Brooklyn because like yeah. I was only kind of kidding. He's like their fourth best player at this point, or third best player.
Yeah. Is Brooke Lopez going to – is he up for a new deal? Where is he in his contract right now?
I don't know. We could always look that up, I suppose. We're on the internet.
We are on the internet.
Yeah. Brooke Lopez. Poor Brooke Lopez. That's a bad situation.
This is not – yeah, it's not relative to the Raptors at all, but I'm just curious to see how much
– Hey,
how much
division rivals.
That's right. Yeah, his contract's up at the end of next year, so he might be a piece. Like he's on an old deal, so he might be someone on the move this year. And we say that every year, but intriguing, definitely intriguing as a trade chip,
for sure. So next up, I have in 14th the Philadelphia 76ers with 23 wins,
higher than me, but I have them there too at 17.
Okay, I think they cool. I think Ben Simmons is going to be really good. You know, they don't really have much shooting and they don't really have a point guard at this point, and they have 400 bigs, but I think they'll have enough talent to sort of fiddle through 23 wins, especially since I think a lot of the teams in the East are bad, so they'll find some wins.
Yeah. I'm curious against to see some of the like what their roster ends up being, like what they do with Noel, if he's there, if he's not, you know, what the heck is going to happen with Embiid? Like, is he a player? Is he not a player? They have so many question marks for me that I can't put them any higher than this.
I couldn't put them higher than 14th, but I'm interested to see. I'm gonna watch Sixers games and be excited about it this year, which is something I haven't said for a while.
Yeah, definitely a league pass team.
Yeah. Okay, next up I have the Milwaukee Bucks with 27 wins. The Chris Middleton thing. The Chris Middleton thing is real, man. Like that team is a mess without like he's a stabilizing presence in that starting lineup. And I really worry that they're going to struggle to shoot without him. And, you know, even their starting lineup, like I think it was the I Am Basketball podcast I was listening to last week. They were just kind of like trying to figure out who was going to start for the Bucks. And it's just like, it's not a great set of players they have. I really like Jabari Parker. Giannis is obviously awesome. Other than that, though, it's, you know, they got Jason Terry and Matthew Dellavedova as their next two guards. You know, they're relying on, you know, Rashad Vaughn hopefully taking a step. Mirza Teletovic is okay. And Greg Monroe's still there. I don't know. They just traded for Michael Beasley like to help. Yeah. I don't really see it, man.
Yeah, I think they'll be better than where you have them, but I guess I'm just a little more hopeful about the steps that Giannis is making and his improvement. And I trust that Jason Kidd just kind of has a knack for coaching a team that's just going to be in games throughout the season. So I guess that's why I have them a bit higher. So at 13, I had the Magic because I just don't know what the hell the Magic did in the off season. They're paying their front court like $150 million and the players aren't even that good. they kind of just got Biombo for no reason. That kind of makes me mad. But I've got them at 18 wins. I don't like the Magic at all.
18 wins. So you have three teams sub 20.
Yeah.
That is, I think you might be wrong.
I could be. I just really don't like the Magic.
We'll get to the Magic because I like them more than you. Let's say that. Okay, so next, I think, 12th, I had the Miami Heat with 33 wins.
Yeah, close. I had the Heat there too with 35.
Yeah, I think they're going to really, we're going to get to Chris Bosch later in the episode sponsor, spoiler alert, but. Just sucks, man. That sucks. And Josh Richardson's hurt. Goran Dragic is kind of like him and Justice Winslow and Hassan Whiteside are the sort of three guys. They have James Johnson now.
Oh,
Derek Williams, Josh McRoberts. This team is bad. Like
they are. Yeah, they might be worse than the Magic.
I believe they will be. That leads me to my next pick. In 11th, I have the Magic with 35 wins. I know the front court is a mess, okay? I know it's a disaster in terms of just, like, too many bodies for not enough positions. They have Jeff Green. Why do they have Jeff Green? But I think there's enough talent there. I think Nick Vucevic might just, like, not play very much. I know he's paid a ton, and that guy's also a guy in an old deal. Maybe he gets moved at some point. I don't think he really fits with what they're trying to do. I think they're trying to go super athletic, and I like Serge Ibaka for them. I like him as a guy who can sort of stretch the floor in an unlikely spot, given they don't really have shooting with Aaron Gordon or Biombo. And, you know, Elfrid Payton's fine. DJ Augustine's a fine backup. He's, you know, weirdly good sometimes, depending where he is. Frank Vogel's also a really damn good coach. So I kind of put some stock in that. We saw what he did against the Raptors last year. Evan Fournier is a good scorer. I don't know. I just think there's enough pieces there that they can, you know, be close in games and have some games where they look really good once they sort of figure out what the geometry is going to be of their team.
Yeah, I guess I have disconnect between, you know, the players that they have and just not wanting to watch this team at all. Right. So I've got in that spot, I've got the Bulls actually down all the way down there at 36 wins. Okay. I'm sure we'll have a discussion about the Bulls because I know you've got them out of your playoff picture too. You know, they're going to be a team that draws tickets. They've definitely got some, you know, A-list players as far as names go, but I don't see how it fits in a basketball context, you know, to win a lot of games. I think they're going to really struggle on the defensive end, which isn't good for them. It's not good for their best player in Jimmy Butler. And I just don't think their coach is that good. I don't know. Hoiberg, you know, if they're going to play some up-tempo style of basketball with this team, and maybe this roster is a little bit better suited with Rondo running it and with Wade out there. But I just see them being a disaster on the defensive end.
I mean, Robin Lopez is a nice center for them. I have them ninth with 37 wins out of the playoffs. Yeah. I don't see, like, there's no shooting on this team. Mirotić and Butler are like their two best shooters. And like they're okay. Butler had a, like, I think he had a down year last year shooting. Mirotić has always been kind of hot and cold. And yeah, Robin Lopez is nice and Taj Gibson's nice, but you know, Gibson's not always healthy. Wade is obviously not always healthy. Rondo was like a disaster last year. Yeah, he had a ton of assists for Sacramento, but that team was awful and he was a big part of it just with his stat hunting and his inability to shoot at all or his refusal to shoot at all. I'd rather see Denzel Valentine and Jerian Grant play for them. I really would. Like, I mean, the Wade thing is cool for Chicago and everything, but like, I just don't see how it works. Doug McDermott's going to score 30 on the Raptors one time this year, and the Raptors probably go 0-4 against them, but I really don't see it for the Bulls. I think, yeah, 37 and ninth place is where I have them. I saw something today. Well, they have like the sixth best title odds. I'm like, who's making these odds?
I don't know. That's really strange. Like I said, I don't see, you know, a defensive coach there that, you know, brings that out of this roster, and they need somebody who's going to bring it out of this roster. Cause I think there's just a lot of talent that's getting on with age. That's just not going to be inspired to play on that end of the floor.
Yeah, for sure. So I skipped ahead there, but 10th, I had the Knicks at 35 wins.
I had the Bucks there. I had them at 37.
Okay. I don't know. I like the Knicks, sort of. Like, I mean, the whole Derrick Rose thing is kind of gross on one hand. And he's not a very good basketball player anymore either. I mean, Brandon Jennings was a really nice signing for them to be their backup. I think he's going to play a pretty big role this year. And, like, they have some interesting guys. Like, Courtney Lee is always solid. I'm interested to see year two of Kristaps, even though he sort of tailed off down the stretch. And, you know, they have my boy Lance Thomas. But, like, after Noah, their center rotation is Marshall Plumlee and Willie Hernangómez. That's not great. You know, Kyle O'Quinn's in the mix there, too. I don't know. I don't see it with this team. They're old in terms of, you know, Anthony's, you know, he's still very, very good, obviously. But, you know, his knees are not always up to snuff. And Noah, I don't think, is going to hold up for the whole year. Rose, if he does, will still be, you know, bad shooting Derrick Rose, who doesn't play much defense. I don't really see this team being all that good.
Super team, though. They're a super team.
Yeah. God damn it.
Okay. Yeah, I've got the Bucks at 37. We talked about them. So I got the Wizards just out of the playoffs at 9. 39 wins. So who have you got at 9?
I have the Bulls at 9.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So where did you have the Wizards?
I have the Wizards at 7 with 43 wins. Yeah.
So do you believe that John Wall and Bradley Beal are best friends now?
No, maybe not, but I think they'll be fine because they're adults and they're professional basketball players.
But they have to be best friends.
Yes, that's what everyone has to be. You know, Shaq and Kobe were best friends when they won 3 titles.
Also, I find it funny that Wizards fans are still hanging on to the fact that they swept the Raptors in 2015.
Well, we can get back to that in a bit because
throwing empty shots.
Where I have the Wizards placed, it might be interesting for Wizards fans and Raptors fans alike. So we'll get to that in a bit. But number 8, I have the Pacers with 41 wins. What do you have there?
I had the Knicks there. I had them in the playoff picture with 44. But I have all the same concerns that you do with them. I just think higher end, there's potential. There's potential for them to win a lot of games, I think. And it'll be interesting. They're definitely.
I mean, there's such a soft, gooey middle of the East, like from like 4 till like 12, I guess, or 11. Like they're like any of those teams could do something, and I wouldn't be surprised.
Yeah, that's why we're doing this. It's interesting to talk about.
But for me, with the Pacers at 9 with 41, I know everyone wants to like dub them as like off season winners and things like that. I just don't really see it either. Like Jeff Teague is nice. I like George Hill on that team a hell of a lot more than I like Jeff Teague on that team. Miles Turner is awesome, but they're relying on him to do a lot as sort of their do-everything center. Al Jefferson will be a nice sort of change of pace off the bench, but it's totally against the up-tempo kind of thing they seem to want to do. You know, at the 4, they have Thad Young and then just a bunch of crap. CJ Miles still kicking around. Like, I don't know. This team is like 6 guys deep, and then I don't really like anyone on their team. So I'm not really sure that holds up over the course of a full season. Paul George is awesome, and he could totally win them, you know, 5 extra games from what I predicted here. But I just don't really see the depth here, and Monte Ellis is still here, too. So I just like the starting lineup is fun on paper with Young, Turner, George, Ellis, and Teague, but I'm not really sure it translates into. I'm not sure what they would do well. You know what I mean? Like, I don't think it's a great defensive unit. I'm not sure it's an awesome offensive unit. Yeah, George is really good, but even he sort of has his struggles throughout the course of a regular season. So that's my concern with the Pacers.
Fair enough.
Yeah. Okay, moving up. 7, as I mentioned, I have the Wizards. I think, you know, with an offseason to adjust, I think Scott Brooks kind of got a raw deal in Oklahoma City. I think he's a good coach. And I think he could probably get something out of, you know, there's a lot of talent on the roster. I really like the Wall, Beal, Morris kind of triumvirate they have there. I think, you know, with a bit more time to get acclimated with Markieff Morris, that could work. Gortat and Mahinmi is a really nice 1-2 center combo. That reminds me a lot last year of Valanciunas and Biombo, really. Two guys who do sort of different things, but are both very reliable. Mahinmi was awesome in the playoffs. The guard depth for the Wizards is a little concerning, given Trey Burke is their backup point guard and Marcus Thornton is their backup too. They're going to be relying on a lot from Kelly Oubre, hopefully, in his second year. There are some issues with depth on the Wizards, but I think the talent's there for them to get back into the groove and sort of recover from last season.
Yeah, I think John Wall has a lot to prove too, I think, with you know, the Kyrie Irving conversation, and he's just been kind of left out to dry a little bit with all the great point guards in the league we have right now, you know.
Which is weird because 2 years ago, like the year the Raptors got swept, I mean, he was amazing that season. You know, he was, you know, he had features about him done on the Grantland Basketball Hour. Like, he was really sort of a darling of that season. And last year, it pretty quickly all evaporated just because the Wizards were such a disaster.
Yeah, the question mark for me is, can Beal stay healthy? And then can Wall reach his high end? Or is he still just going to be a bad shooter who can run and dribble really fast? Like, he has such a great high end, but I'm not sure if he's going to get there.
Right. Okay, moving up. Sixth, I have the Hawks at 44 wins.
Okay.
What do you have?
I've got, at 7, I had the Pacers at 45, but 6, I've got the Hornets at 46. And like you said, it's just kind of a big mess of teams here. I had the Hornets a bit higher when I initially looked at this. But I flopped between them and the Hawks, and I put the Hawks higher.
Okay.
I like the Hornets though on paper, and I think they might be higher. I guess you have them higher than this.
Well, actually, I have the Hawks 6th with 44, and I have the Hornets 5th with 44.
Oh, okay, fair
So,
enough.
yeah, I think they're very, I mean, they're not similar teams, but I think they are similarly talented, I suppose.
Just a super well-coached team in Charlotte too. I think
I mean.
Atlanta's more of a question mark because you don't know how the Dwight Howard thing is going to work, but you can pretty much bank on Charlotte winning about 45 games this year.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's going to be interesting to see what happens with Kidd Gilchrist because, he is super amazing on defense. His shooting is still an issue, but, if Batum and Marvin Williams and Kemba Walker can sort of offset that, what Walker's not a great 3-point shooter, but he was better than he ever has been last season. And, that whole stat that was out there with just how much better he was shooting with Batum on the floor, that definitely holds water. And Batum staying healthy is going to be really important. He was kind of up and down last year with his health. And yeah, I think they just cleared out some of the glut in their front court a little bit too. And, Cody Zeller, Spencer Hawes, Roy Hibbert as centers, like they all have different things they do well. I don't think Hawes is very good, and I'm not sure Hibbert is good anymore, but, Steve Clifford has been designing this defense that's been amazing without a rim protector for so long. I mean, what's he going to do with actually having a rim protector? It's kind of interesting. So yeah, I like the Hornets a lot. I think maybe I was a bit low for 44 for them, but again, I just kind of have a jumble of 40-ish win teams in the East. So, them and the Hawks are interchangeable, I think. So, who'd you have fifth?
I have the Pistons in five with
Okay.
46.
Okay.
Let's talk about the Hawks maybe. I've got them at 50
Yeah.
wins. I've got them in fourth.
Okay.
What do you like, not like about the Hawks?
I like the idea of Dennis Schroeder. I just don't think he's very good yet, and he's like John Wall light to me. That's sort of what he reminds me of. And just, but he's also just like a lot more reckless, I think. And, Jarrett Jack is their backup point guard, which is never good. I really like their draft picks in Bembry and Torian Prince. I think those guys have a chance to actually do something right away. Just in terms of their defense. But yeah, I want to see this team first before I get too up or down on them. Like, I really want to see how Millsap and Howard work together because, theoretically, they should be pretty good together. And having Tiago Splitter hopefully back healthy will be a nice thing too for that front court. I want to see this team before I make any judgments because they could be higher, they could be lower. But the Schroeder thing kind of throws me off a little bit. I just don't think he's as good as Jeff Teague. And just especially not in this system where having five guys who could shoot at all times was always really valuable for the Hawks, and now they have three of those guys. And, I'm not totally sure if it's gonna. I mean, I think Budenholzer is a good enough coach where he can sort of change their system up to take advantage of the strengths of his players a bit more. But I want to see it first. Again,
Yeah,
like I said,
I think
yeah.
Dwight Howard needs to accept a pick and roll type of role with this team.
Yeah.
That's really going to be the key for them in getting, are they a 45 or a 50 win team? I think if Dwight Howard accepts that he's not a back to the basket player anymore and hasn't been for a few years, he could be a dangerous pick and roll player for the Hawks, especially with Schroeder out there and having some shooting around him with Millsap. Having that as kind of a base for their offense is kind of an interesting idea, but he's just not been accepting of that role. I'm hopeful that with some better coaching, he'll do that this year. That's why I have him a bit higher than you do, but that's definitely a huge question mark. Like you said, we have to see them.
Yeah, that's like they're the one team where I mean I'm dumb, so I can't really put a gauge on any team, but they're the one team that I just like have no idea what they're gonna look like. And Kyle Korver too is a bit of a thing for me too. Like, I mean, he had a career season the year they won 60 games, and he shot like 50% from three, which was incredible. Last year he shot a lot less, 39% from three, just south of 40. And, that was a big hit to just sort of the efficiency of their offense. And now you take away Al Horford shooting, you take away Jeff Teague shooting. I do think they're going to have issues with shooting on this team. And we'll see. Although they could be really good defensively too, with Bazemore, Millsap, and Howard sort of anchoring it. I can't pin them down, man. I don't know. It's tough.
Yeah,
But you have them fourth with 50, you
I have
said?
him fourth with 50. I think Coach Bud will figure it out.
Okay. And you said you had the Pistons fifth with 46, right?
Yeah.
I have them fourth with 47, so I think we're pretty close on the Pistons. Yeah. I'm pretty high on the Pistons. I think they're, like, just looking at all those teams, they're, like, the only one that really interested me and sort of got me excited of that jumble of Middle East teams, yeah, you know what I mean?
I love Stan Van. I love their roster. They just have the best, you know, roster possible for Stan Van Gundy, and, you know, God help them. If Andre Drummond learns to shoot free throws, they could be a 50-win team in the Eastern Conference. Like, they have that kind of talent. Reggie Jackson is another guy, another point guard who maybe isn't talked about that much, you know, with the Lowrys and the Irvings. And he's, you know, right on the verge of being in that top tier of player. So I love the Pistons. I love watching them play. Their series against the Cavs last year was awesome to watch, that 1-8 matchup. So I'm hopeful for them to take that jump into a home court advantage situation this year.
And hey, no more Steve Blake as their backup point guard. Ish Smith, baby.
Oh, that's better.
Which is, yeah, it's a lot better. And I don't know, I just love their sort of interchangeable wing guys. You know, Tobias Harris, Marcus Morris, Stanley Johnson, Kentavious Caldwell-Pope. I think those four guys are just, they're really tough to go against defensively. And Drummond has never been a great defender. But I mean, even behind him, you got Aaron Baines and Boban now. It's just kind of a deep roster. John Luehr was a nice pickup for them for, I think, like $10 million a year. I think he torched the Raptors in a game last year at the ACC with Phoenix. I don't know. I just, they seem deep to me. They seem like they're really, really built in the mold of their coach. And I'm also a giant Stanley Johnson fan, so I think he's going to take a leap this year.
Yeah.
He remains one of my favorite players out of that really good draft. Okay, so number three.
This is it. Drum roll.
This is it. I'll edit in a drum roll, maybe. Probably not. Number three, I have the Boston Celtics with 52 wins.
Oh, what? You're a hater.
Yeah.
The Raptors are going to take a huge step back this year, didn't you hear?
Yeah, you know, Bismack Biyombo was a franchise center.
Okay, so.
What do you have?
I have the Celtics at 51, the Raptors at 52. I think it's going to be close, but I think the Raptors are not taking the step back that people expect that they're going to in the wider NBA community. I think the people who know this team understand that their 56 wins did not come because they had a great backup center. The entertainment value of their playoff games came from their backup center, which skews it. I think it skews the perception of the Raptors a little bit in the eyes of the people who might not know this team as well. So I definitely think that the Celtics have more question marks. Al Horford is a great player and it's a great addition for them. But, you know, health wise, they still have players who could be a question mark for them. And I think the Raptors just have the continuity advantage here.
Yeah, I mean, the Biyombo thing is crazy to me because it wasn't even, like you mentioned, the entertainment quality of the playoff games. It was like 8 of the playoff games that he actually did things in. Like, they were, like, he was a no-show in 4 of the Cleveland games, and, you know, most of the Pacers series except for Game 5, really, and then half the Heat series. Like, he was good for a handful of games in the playoffs, and he was really good in those games, but he was making $2 million a year. Like, it's going to stand out more when he is not productive a lot of the time, or he's totally hampering the offense a lot of the time, making $17 million, especially on, that Magic team that's going to be shooting-starved, but... and now I'm rethinking the 35 wins prediction I have for them. I don't see the Raptors taking a giant step back. I have them at 53 wins, Boston at 52. I would take Kyle Lowry over Isaiah Thomas pretty easily, I think. I think most people would, other than people in Boston, just because of the defensive aspect. And, you know, I don't really see... You know, Kyle Lowry getting outmatched in a playoff series against Isaiah Thomas, for example. Jay Crowder is awesome, and it would be nice to have Jay Crowder for $7 million a year instead of Damari Carroll for $15 million a year, because I think Crowder is probably a better player at this point. But you know what? That's almost a wash, I think, if Carroll's at 100%. Maybe I'm totally overvaluing Carroll and undervaluing Crowder, but I think they do very similar things, and Crowder might just be a bit more of a bully. But also, it's weird that Jay Crowder and Avery Bradley, they don't seem like guys who can really stop DeMar DeRozan, which is interesting to me. Like, DeRozan has had trouble sometimes less so last season, but he's had trouble with bigger wings before. And Boston's never really seemed to bother him. I'm not sure if it's a scheme thing that they're doing or what it is, but that's something to keep in mind as well. I like Boston's team, don't get me wrong. I think Amir Johnson and Al Horford in the front court is going to be really nice, and with sprinklings of Kelly Olynyk. But after that, you know, I think the Raptors top to bottom are just, you know, a bit more talented on the whole. Maybe not as deep, but I think they have more talent. And in a playoff series, you know, Brad Stevens is scary for sure, but I don't know. I have a hard time picking against the Raptors. And maybe this is total homerism coming through, but I think it's going to be fun to watch these teams like actually compete for something this year. I think that second seed is going to be really important for, you know, what seems like an inevitable second round series. So I'm really interested to watch these games between these two teams, but I still think the Raptors have the edge despite what people think about Bismack Biyombo.
Yeah, and I think the Celtics roster, again, it's very attractive, but it is still a fairly young team, and they're going to have players in their rotation that don't have a lot of experience. You know, Rozier is going to be maybe a rotation player for them, and he's coming into his second year. Marcus Smart is still in his third year. He can't shoot. The Raptors bench, I think, is better than the Celtics is right now. And it's hard to take all these young pieces, you know, add in a possible superstar in Al Horford. We don't really know if he is, you know, a bona fide center superstar after playing so many years next to, you know, I would say a superstar in Paul Millsap.
Yeah.
And who knows? Isaiah Thomas, you know, doesn't really have the ability to take over a basketball game. So it's hard to imagine this team winning 50 games, but just by the impact of all the players that they have, you would expect them to be right around there. But again, I think the Raptors just have better high-end talent. They have a better bench. And I think that they're better suited to, you know, get over the hump and get that second seed again.
Yeah, the Celtics, I think, are the fourth best title odds. I think the Raptors are eighth.
Incredibly attractive roster, just as far as, you know, yeah, guys who want to play and guys who want to give all their effort. You know, they've just got tons of those guys like Bradley and Smart and Thomas and Crowder. It's Johnson even. It's just an attractive team from a hustle and from that standpoint. I don't know if the talent is there to get over the Raptors.
Yeah, I mean, Vegas odds are kind of set to where, you know, teams like Boston are going to get a lot of money bet on them. So you can understand why their odds might be a little, you know, askew. But I still think, again, this could be total homerism coming through. But I just think if you factor in continuity and just, you know, Kyle Lowry, I think, is the best player on either team. And going from there, it's very reductive. But I just think that's going to win out. So, but I do think, you know, it gets into the conversation of, like, expectations for the Raptors this year. And sort of, like, what means a successful season. And I think having the Celtics as sort of a measuring stick that they can sort of, you know, always try to be above. If they can pull out the season and they can be ahead of the Celtics and, you know, have home court in a second round series and hopefully win that series, you know, I think that is success for this season. I think you can really base your success on what you do against this Boston team, which seems like a bit of an upstart. Yeah. What do you think about that?
Yeah, I like that too, because, you know, the last couple years there's been that soft middle of the Eastern Conference and the Raptors have either been in it or slightly ascendant from that, as in last year when they won 56. They haven't had a measuring stick in their division for, you know, quite a few years now, so that's definitely something to look forward to. And it, you know, they play each other what, four times in the season, so yeah, those are definitely games to mark on the calendar.
Yeah, they're gonna be a lot of fun. Okay, so I guess we both have the Cavs. I have 57 wins for the Cavs to finish first.
Yeah, 58.
Okay, I think that's pretty academic at this point.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, they're quite good, if you didn't hear. Okay, do you want to get to some Twitter questions here?
Sure.
We're going to kind of keep track of what our picks were, and we'll come back at the end of the year. Maybe we'll see who was furthest off in terms of total wins correct and things like that. We can sort of do that. So
Orlando Magic, 18 wins, baby.
Yeah, that's gonna be a big win for me. Maybe they might fall right in the middle of your 18 and my 35. Yeah. But all right, you want to get some questions?
Yeah.
Okay, cool. First question comes from the Masyber human, William Liu. What a handle. How long until the season starts? I'm fucking dying. I guess we're at 29 days now. Yeah, 29 days. That's good. We'll be there very soon. Not much else to add to that. Next one comes from Arun Srinivasan, our pal at Arun Things. Best worst interviews of Media Day. As I mentioned, I was sort of floating around and just sort of trying to get phone interviews for the radio station, so I didn't really see most of the press conferences or interviews. I will say my favorite moment of Media Day was Pascal Siakam, like bouncing a basketball on his head and like kicking around like a soccer ball. I guess he's got some soccer skills from his time in Cameroon, I believe. I think he grew up playing soccer and then switched to basketball. But yeah, he was quite dexterous with the ball in his feet, I must say. It was kind of enthralling to watch. Did you have any favorite things for Media Day?
I mean, I like Bebe doing method acting for a serious person. But, you know, apart from that, it kind of all just went as we planned.
Yeah, exactly. No one got fat, so that's good.
Well, no, Kyle Lowry didn't get fat.
No, he did not get fat. He just looks fat because he shaved. He got rid of his high top haircut kind of deal.
I'll do it every time.
Yeah. Well, what else did I? Oh, Jared Sullinger. That guy seems like he's going to be fun.
Yeah.
He seems like a good dude. I talked to him for a little bit. He seems like a very nice guy and very like sort of quirky and just kind of fun. So that'll be good. Next question. I think this might be my favorite question in the history of the podcast. It comes from Linus Classic. Please rank the studs who have worn number 9 for the franchise. And he provided us a list of guys who have worn number 9.
Oh, God.
Here's the list.
Yeah.
Tony Massenburg in 96. Sherrone Wright in 96. Roy Rogers in 98. Cornell David in 01. Rick Brunson in 04. Pop So from 05 to 07. Maceo Bastin in 08. Joey Dorsey in 2011. And Rasul Butler in 2012. So apparently number 9 is like the defense against the dark arts position at Hogwarts if you're the Raptors. Because, good lord, that is a list of one and done guys. Except for Pop So, they only played in one season, each of these guys. That's crazy.
Rasul Butler was a great player on NBA Live 2005, though.
He really was with like the Hornets.
Yeah, he had like a 98 three-point percentage. I had him averaging like 35 points a game.
Okay, so let's rank these guys.
He's number 1 for me.
Oh, I think Pop So is number 1 just from his longevity standpoint.
Yeah.
Oh, Kevin Pillar. Sorry. Kevin Pillar just made a really nice catch in the 8th inning. So that was great.
I'll give Pop So number 2 just because I know who that is.
Okay. So I got So 1. I'm going to go Maceo Bastin 2. Rasul Butler 3. He didn't play for the Raptors for very long.
No.
He was like 4 Joey Dorsey. 4, I'll go Joey Dorsey. 5, Tony Massenburg. I don't remember him as a Raptor, but I remember him as, I think, on the Wolves, maybe Boston. I remember his existence in the NBA, so we'll go him number 5. Rick Brunson number 6, because I seem to remember him having him in some NBA Live games as like the 15th guy on the roster. So we'll go with him. I don't remember him as a Raptor either. I don't remember any of these people really as a Raptor, except for So and Bastin, but... next, I don't know who Sherrone Wright, Roy Rogers, or Cornell David are, so they're tied for 7th, I suppose.
Yeah, I'll go with that list. That sounds good.
Good question, though. We should do that more often with better numbers. Next question comes from Raptor Whisperer at Peck Pulagini. Sorry if I screwed that up. When will the Raps pull the trigger on a Ross, Sully, DeLon, and the Clippers first for a stud power forward deal?
That trade could only happen to the Los Angeles Clippers because Terrence Ross was born to be a Los Angeles Clipper. My steadfast belief that Terrence Ross will be the starting small forward for the Los Angeles Clippers at some point in his career.
You might not be wrong. After the trade for Blake Griffin, of course.
That's it. Stud PF.
Yeah. I honestly, I know I talked myself into the Orlando Magic being good. Or at least semi-good, but the idea of a potential Serge Ibaka rental deal at the deadline is kind of looming for me. And I think the money matches up where you could do Ross in a pick for Ibaka if, you know, Orlando decides they don't think they're going to keep him. That interests me a little bit. Is there anything else out there that you think is even possible this year? Have you even thought about it? Because I really haven't thought about it. It's just the Ibaka thing I've thought about.
No, I think this is like we're at the point of the year right now where we need to see what this team looks like before we start idealizing some trade situations. We don't even know if Sellinger, you know, what type of player he's going to be for this team. So I'll hold tight. Yeah. I'll hold tight on waiting for a stud PF until we see how this whole thing is going to work for a little while.
Yeah, we will. address future Raptor Serge Ibaka a little later. Next question comes from 40 and Dunking at Midlife Vertical. With Carroll's ongoing health concerns, should the Raptors have signed a veteran small forward instead of Brady Heslip? I already mentioned my lust for Lance Thomas. Obviously, that's sort of gone out the window, and it's not really in the category of what we're talking about here. I'm not really sure what veteran small forwards are available, and I'm not sure Brady Heslip's going to make the team anyway.
They don't have enough money to sign anybody.
That too, yeah. I mean, you know, maybe Drew Crawford makes the team as like a small forward wing insurance guy behind Carroll. Other than that, yeah, I don't really... there's not really anyone out there, right? Like, there's no buyout guys yet. Like, that's later in the season, obviously. I guess they have the biannual exception at this point, but, you know, what veteran is taking that to come to the Raptors to be, you know, the fifth wing, right? Like, it's tough, right?
Yeah.
And like, Heslip's nice. Like, he can shoot. I don't think he'll make the team. He'll just be a stud for the 905, I'm thinking. But
Carroll being injured doesn't mean it's next man up, and like, they need to find somebody to fit into the rotation. I think they haven't, like we said, they have enough wings to fill those minutes. It's just a question of how good the team will be as they do that. I don't think they necessarily need a new warm body. It's just a matter of whether Ross and Norman Powell can do the job.
Right, right. Next question comes from Asad Alvi at Swarlazers. Which Canadian province does each of the Raptors' six starters best represent? I'm guessing this means Patterson and Sullinger are both considered in that.
The shade.
Okay, so Kyle Lowry. God. Kyle Lowry, which province is Kyle Lowry?
Oh, God.
I'm going to say he's Newfoundland.
Why?
Because you got to be scrappy to live out there, man. You got to be hard. You got to be hardy.
I would say Quebec because... He needs to be hardy and a little bit different, but not necessarily at the edge of the world.
Yeah, but I wouldn't say Quebec is underappreciated in the grand scheme of things. Like, Quebec's properly appreciated as being Quebec.
They think they're underappreciated.
I guess. I don't really like that comp, but we'll give it to you. DeMar DeRozan.
Alberta.
Yeah, he's wealthy.
Yeah, well, maybe Alberta's not wealthy, but I was going to say like...
I guess not anymore, yeah.
A surprising amount of economic activity goes through DeMar DeRozan, and people out east don't necessarily respect him for it, so...
Kind of has like an old school ideals about things and how to play offense, and I guess Alberta has some sort of ideas from the past.
This is great. This is a good question.
Yeah, I love it. Okay, next, Damari Carroll.
Oh, boy. DeMar Carroll seems kind of BC.
Really? I was going to say Patrick Patterson.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, DeMar Carroll, he's like a fashion icon. And, you know, he's a hard worker. Again, a lot of economic activity.
Wait. DeMar Carroll's a fashion icon?
Oh, yeah, he's a fashion icon.
With his bird pajamas?
He's a fashion icon, man. Show some respect.
So yeah, I would have had Patterson as BC just because he seems very, like, I don't know, he just seems very metropolitan. And maybe that makes him Ontario, but I think Corey Joseph has Ontario cornered, as according to the question from Assad.
Well, he's not one of the six starters.
Oh, shade from you.
he said in the question, Ontario not included since Corey Joseph. Fair enough.
Yeah.
Oh, okay, yeah. I didn't see that. I was going to have Patrick Patterson as Ontario, so...
Oh, I thought you were throwing shade at Patterson for not being a starter.
Oh, that's, no.
I mean, Patterson would make sense as Ontario because he's also very, you know, the TIFF stuff, and he's very metropolitan. So maybe that's it. I guess, you know, the dreads would work for Damari in BC. That's a thing, right?
Yeah, people I don't think so, but yes.
But like weed and stuff? I don't know.
Okay. We're really stretching.
Yeah, we are. I mean, Damari could also work as, like, you know, Manitoba, no?
I don't know.
He's, I mean, what would you say your people are like?
Not Damari Carroll.
Are they tough?
No.
No?
I mean, we have hard winters, but a lot of people do out west.
Maybe Carroll's Newfoundland, then.
Yeah, I don't know. I think fashion-wise, he's just so BC.
All right, you're really entrenched in him being BC. Okay, we'll stick him in BC. Patterson will give Ontario. Jared Sullinger.
Sully, oh God. Something out east.
I give him Nova Scotia. It's close to Boston, you know, sort of near home. I bet he likes seafood.
Oh,
I have no idea if he likes seafood.
surf and turf.
I mean, we could always put him in.
How many fat jokes are we gonna make for Jared Salinger this year? Like under the table, though, like not explicitly.
We could always put him in Alberta for the Alberta beef, but that's very mean.
But you like seafood, wink, wink, Nova Scotia.
Yeah, seafood's healthy. Yeah, we'll put him in Nova Scotia, close to Boston. That's my reasoning. Jonas Valanciunas.
Oh, Saskatchewan.
Why?
He's a big old prairie boy. Big old.
There's like a big European contingent in like Eastern European contingent.
Can't you just see Jonas Valanciunas in a tractor?
Just like baling hay
with
his bear.
Oh yeah, he could do it. He's got a back for days. He's got a farmer's back. He should be in Saskatchewan.
All right. I was trying to come up with a nice Saskatchewan pun, but I couldn't think of one for Jonas Valanciunas. It's very disappointing.
We'll share him. He'll be like Flin Flon. He'll be Saskatchewan and Manitoba.
Wait, that's a thing?
Yeah, half of it is in Saskatchewan, half of it is in Manitoba.
Is that like Fort Saskatchewan, Alberta?
Yes.
Okay, that makes sense then. Shout out to Canadian geography.
Shout out Flin Flon.
Yeah, I guess that's it for the starters. We could go all the players, but I think that we're going to run out of provinces. So, next question, it comes from Assad again. Raps versus Clips in the finals, who wins?
Who's Terrence Ross on in that situation? That's what I want to know. That's the answer to the question, because whoever Terrence Ross is with, that team does not win.
That is some slander. I will not appreciate it.
Oh, you don't know. You might make the leap this year.
He's going to make the leap this year. He's going to win six man. Trust me.
He was not on muscle watch. Terrence Ross looks exactly the same as he did when he was 19, unfortunately.
All right. At least he didn't get fat. That's a good thing.
I don't think he can. I don't think he can put on weight.
He's one of those.
Thing. Yeah.
Yeah. I had a roommate like that. He would eat McDonald's every day and didn't get fat. It was highly annoying.
We know what he'll be. He'll be a 38% three-point shooter. He'll make, you know, 4 to 5 really stupid mistakes every week. Yeah.
You score 18 points a game.
Well, that's pushing it.
3 steals.
This is the year, man.
Probably win the dunk contest, 3-point comp, double. Probably.
Oh, right? One day he'll be the 3-and-D guy we drafted.
Man, I got like so much hate when we did our hoop talks thing a couple weeks ago, and I like defended Terrence Ross. I got like booed. People don't like Terrence Ross at all.
He's still here.
Makes me sad. All right, that's all we got for questions. We're going to take a quick break on the other side. We're going to come back with a very special and kind of somber episode sponsor. So we'll be back in just a second here on the headquarters. Okay, welcome back to the headquarters. Sean Woodley here with John Godis, wrapping things up here with your episode sponsor. This week's episode is brought to you by Chris Bosch. Third best player in Raptors history at this point, right?
Yep.
Yeah. At one point was the second best. He's top three in pretty much every category you could name. Obviously went to the Miami Heat, won a couple titles. He's been an all-star for about 400 years. He was such a damn good player, underappreciated, I think, for what he did, especially, you know, those first couple of years with the Heat where everyone kind of blamed him for the losing in the first year. Obviously, you know, the Mavs and LeBron had a bad finals that year, but, you know, everyone kind of pointed to Bosch as like sort of being a third wheel there. But really, he was incredibly important to everything they wanted to do. You know, he's kind of the prototype for, you know, the modern day, like, you know, the bigs that are coming out, the Miles Turners, the Kristaps Porzingis, the Karl-Anthony Towns, you know, being able to shoot it out to distance a little bit and also being a really good defender. That's kind of the model now, right? And Bosch sort of helped to form what that prototype is once he moved to the Heat after being kind of a suspect defender with the Raptors for most of his career there, or just at least being considered one. But so it seems as though his career with the Heat is going to be over. I don't think it doesn't seem like they're going to clear him for to play with his medical condition with the blood clots. It seems like it's very likely going to end his career, which sucks because it's too young for someone that good to be having to wrap things up with his career. He's so good, 13 seasons in the NBA, and it's too bad we probably aren't going to get any more. Do you have any super great memories of Chris Bosh as a Raptor?
Yeah, I mean, like, there's so many. I was just becoming a fan of the Raptors during his early years, like 2003, 2004. So, you know, it was kind of a desperate time for the team, but it was nice to have one piece. And, you know, before DeRozan was the player who spent his off seasons getting better, you could see, like, Chris Bosh becoming, like, a superstar before our eyes, essentially. Like, he was this super skinny kid who wouldn't get in the paint when he first came out of college, and then really, you know, grew into a stud power forward, more or less, kind of in the vein of Kevin Garnett type of talent set. Yeah, it was great to have, you know, a franchise player to kind of bridge those awful years, because if there hadn't been Chris Bosh with the Raptors, I mean, you would have gone a long time between the Vince Carter successful years and then, you know, where we are now. Chris Bosh was a great bridge. He gave a lot of us, you know, hope. When he left, a lot of people were pissed, but it's hard to think that his basketball career might be over, you know, at still a pretty young age, but it's disappointing.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to think of, like, standout memories of Chris Bosh for me. I mean, I guess it's that time where, you know, you're a big fan. I just didn't register a lot. I mean, you know, those couple playoff years were nice. And, you know, there were always the years where, you know, he was never really in the MVP conversation, but you could definitely tell he was, you know, he was a fringe contender at the very least. And you had the fans chanting MVP for him a couple of years there, especially his last year. And I believe the year that they went to the playoffs as well, in 06-07, lost in the first round. I think they came third in the East that year. I think Sam Mitchell, that's the year he won Coach of the Year. Yeah. That was a really fun year. And just like his, you know, undying ability to just hit mid-range jumpers, like he was LaMarcus Aldridge before LaMarcus Aldridge, right? Like, he, as a pick and pop threat, he was impossible to stop. He, you know, just he'd get on the floor and it'd be 10 minutes in and he'd had hit three jumpers, and he was just like he just always seemed to be in the groove, you know what I mean?
Yeah, in a vacuum, like, that 06-07 season was pretty fun. Like, for a few years I was like, okay, we need to get back to that, because I think that was like the Colangelo kind of coming out, where it seemed like the Raptors had bucked the system and become the new Spurs. Like, they had Anthony Parker, who they picked up from Maccabi Tel Aviv, and he was like this great shooter in the corner. Yeah. And like, they had just seemed to figure out this kind of pseudo-European team.
With Calderon, Garbajosa,
Bargnani. Yeah. And it was like, oh man, we beat the system. Like, we're going to be like this super international team for a long time. And, you know, Bosh was the anchor of all of that. It was like kind of a fun year in a vacuum. The team wasn't that fun to watch in any of the years outside of that. But I'll always remember that. Like, that was the year seeing that, you know, the playoff games at the ACC and thinking, okay, like, shit, we need to get back to this at some point. We need to get back to playoff basketball. And luckily we have the last couple of years.
Yeah. I mean, imagine you mentioned, like, imagine those years didn't exist and it was just like this long stretch of nothingness. I mean, it wasn't much, right? It was two first round playoff losses to the Nets and Magic. And the Magic one, I remember just being especially depressing because it just felt like there was no chance at all.
Yeah, they backed in that year.
Yeah, yeah. It was not great. Bosh that year in 06-07, 22.6 points, 10.7 boards. 1.3 blocks, shot 49% from the field. He was good, man. He was really damn good. And it's it really sucks. And I mean, what a shitty week for Miami sports, man. And just like the Jose Fernandez stuff, I mean, obviously that's even more serious than Bosh, but just a really depressing few days there.
Yeah.
And I mean, thoughts with everyone in Miami with the Jose Fernandez situation too. Like, that, ugh. That crushed me Sunday, man.
Yeah, it sucks. It sucks having all that happen in the same span of time. But, you know, as far as Bosch's future goes, you know, he's got a future outside of basketball. He's an awesome personality. whether it's on TV or in some other form. He's not going to be one of those guys that just kind of fades into the night, and maybe he plays again. We still don't know about that, but
Yeah, I mean, I'm not a doctor. I think I'm okay with him never playing again. Just if this is that much of a thing that they're sort of so apprehensive about clearing him to play, I think I'm okay with him never playing again. Just because I don't even want to think about what could happen if he does play and something terrible happens. Like, I don't even want to like imagine going through that. I'm not a doctor, so who knows? But yeah, it just doesn't seem like something that's even worth trying. I you mentioned the TV thing. I think absolutely, like, stick that guy on TV. He'll be the next Barkley. Like, I really do think he's that endearing and that fun and that personable. I think he would be amazing on TV.
Yeah, I absolutely agree.
All right. I think that's all we got, man. We're not going to play the game this time. We'll pass it on it today, but next week we're going to do our prop bets. We're hopefully going to get four guys on the podcast to do them all next week. Because I always felt bad that we left you out of it last year. And so hopefully we'll get everyone involved with that. And we will look ahead to the season with our prop bets. And it'll be a lot more hopefully it's more successful than we were last year. I think I had a rough year. And Harsh definitely had a rough year. I think Harsh was like 2 for 10. So we'll see if there's a redemption story in store for Harsh. Do you have anything coming down on the site?
Yeah, I've got my Damari Carroll player preview, which will be unfortunately a little more depressing than I thought it would be a week ago. But yeah, all those player previews going up in the next couple weeks. So, you know, watch out for all of those, not just mine.
Yeah, I'll be writing the Norm Powell preview. I'll also be writing the SB Nation preview for Thursday. I believe ours comes out in the morning. What else is going on? I think I'm going to write something about the Eastern Conference not being very good and the Bulls sucking and things like that as well. Because, you know, that was one thing Kyle Lowry mentioned in his, I think all of them mentioned it, that just like, oh, the East is better. Yeah, I don't really think it is. Like, I know guys, you know, view these guys like Derrick Rose and Dwayne Wade as, you know, historic, you know, great players because of what they've done. But I just don't really see it with them being able to elevate their teams now. But anyway, we've already talked about that. So look for those things. You can always rate, review, subscribe to the podcast on iTunes. Really appreciate any and all feedback and support. And we're going to do these every week now from here on out for the rest of the season. So looking forward to getting back in the groove. And we will talk to you next week here on the Headquarters.